This hour is being brought to you by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868.
We will rally around Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner.
Just reserve, you know, your opinions.
That's a wonderful time for us to jump in and say goodbye and then ask for some phone calls from people who watch the game.
Two-time NFL MVP.
They talk about this, the greatest show on turf, maybe the best offense ever in football.
Super Bowl champion.
Warner to throw. Going deep downfield. Adjusting for it is Isaac Bruce. Touchdown. 73 yards.
Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Not just the NFL Hall of Fame. And I wear that as a badge of honor because without pro football, in all its forms and fashions, I'm not here tonight.
Radio analyst for Westwood One Sports.
And Amon-Ra St. Brown, who does it all for him.
Shotgun snap goes to the quarterback. Goff fakes the handoff and gets the end around to St. Brown and then throws in the end zone. Caught by Goff at the goal line. Near side. Touchdown, Detroit. The wide receiver just threw a touchdown pass to the quarterback.
I just told you he does it all for this team.
NFL Network analyst.
The Minnesota Vikings will hit their bye week with a London game victory and a 5-0 record.
What you love about the team is both sides are showing up and making the big play when they have to.
Kurt Warner with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
This segment with Kurt Warner is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Plumbing Emergency. Call the plumbing professionals available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. And our segment with Kurt Warner is brought to you by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868.
He's Lawrence Holmes. I'm Matt Spiegel at 670 The Score. Our guy Kurt Warner, as you just heard the highlight, is in London. He called the Jets loss and Aaron Rodgers' failures. That's among the things that come up in this conversation we recorded just a little while ago. But first, we had to ask, how did Caleb do yesterday to you, Kurt?
I liked it. I think what we're seeing just about every week is we're seeing progress. We're seeing him get more and more comfortable with what they're asking him to do, more and more comfortable in the pocket. Some beautiful reads yesterday of working through his progressions and getting off one quicker than he had been and moving on. A couple of my favorites were, I think it was a second touchdown pass to DJ where they had a fake bubble screen to the right. And normally you just stay to the right. They have two options down the field. Neither one of them were open, but normally you just come back to your screen there. And he worked to the right-hand side. Free safety kind of moved over there with the pump in his eyes, and he came all the way to the backside and hit the deep post for a touchdown, which I thought was beautiful. And then another play, one of my favorite plays when I played, something called 525 F post. They ran that in the game, and the defense played what we called one cop. So it's cover one, but they had a cop linebacker sitting in the middle of the field waiting for the quick post. He recognized that and was able to pop his feet and get all the way back to the backside, come back, threw a great ball. I think it was actually dropped on the play, but didn't really care if it was caught or dropped. Just the process for him was really, really good. So you're seeing progress, and you're seeing him what appears that he's more comfortable being able to know what he's seeing and working through the progression. So it was fun. You know, it never hurts to have a little bit of a running game. We've seen that the last couple of weeks, and they've looked a lot better when they've been able to run the football. But it's been fun to watch his progress through the first 5 weeks.
Yeah, every player and coach speaks to that progress week after week and how it keeps going, and that feels like a good sign in general. Last week, Kurt, we were all excited because he was efficient and didn't turn the ball over, and you threw a little water on it. with your comments, and we had a brief good-natured tussle. Does last week's progress getting to that efficient, you know, no turnovers place connect with this week? Because he was still efficient. The numbers are good and still protected the ball, but then also this week hit the explosives, which makes everything look better. So do they connect last week and this week?
Well, you know, I think the hope is that they're connecting, you know, because I see a lot of guys in the league that, you know, hit the lottery or hit the jackpot 1 week and everything looks great. And you're like, okay, they found it. They're there. And then the next week they go back. Like I said, the biggest thing for me with Caleb is they're winning football games where as he's growing and learning, they're finding ways to win football games. That's the most important thing. And then to see small bits of progress. And so, you know, a couple weeks ago, again, it's easy to fall in love with a good throw. It's easy to fall in love with the stats. But what I always want to see is his eyes in the right spot. We've been talking about it here for 5 weeks. And that to me is what tells me more than anything. You know, even if you complete the pass, whatever, do your eyes go to the right spot? Or are you working through things? So I can watch quarterbacks play on film. And when I see their eyes go right, left, I know they have no idea what they're looking at. That just means we're trying to find somebody open. So my head's moving all over the place. When your head is slow and methodical, when it starts to the right and you see the progression, then it goes to the left and you're calm and poised, those are the things that I want to see. So I'm not looking for luck. I'm not looking for you dropping back and, hey, my first guy's open, I can throw it to that guy. Well, everybody in the NFL should be able to do that. I'm not looking for luck where, hey, it just so happened I put my eyes here and the guy was open, so I threw it, even though my eyes should have been somewhere else. What I'm looking for is the understanding of what I'm seeing on the defensive side and my eyes being in the right spot. And then when something's not open, being able to get my eyes to the right spot in my, you know, my second part of my read and my third part of the read. And that's where I saw some real growth yesterday is I really felt like two or three times he was quick to see and then pop his feet and pop his eyes somewhere else. And that's what starts to get me excited, is that he knows what he's looking for to start things. And then he knows exactly where he's going from there, so he can get his eyes there and figure out what's going on beyond that, and then be able to make the plays from a secondary nature. And so, yes, I mean, I think it's all starting to connect a little bit. Where he was week one, where he looked uncomfortable, he couldn't get through his progressions, you know, he got stuck on number one. We've seen gradual improvement week in, week out. And then you're starting to see the talent and the throwing ability to come with it. You know, some of the other things that we saw in like weeks three and four was even when he got to the right place, the ball didn't come out like I saw it come out in college. You know, he's a very gifted thrower of the football and you know, has great touch on the ball. And he's not a guy that normally overthrows the ball. And by that, I mean not throwing it too far, but throwing it too hard and, you know, being late on things and not having touch and throwing a catchable ball. And we saw that a number of times early. And you're starting to see, you know, the touchdown pass to DJ 2 weeks ago, you know, on that little stick pump route up and over the linebacker. And then some of the throws in this game where he's laying it out there and allowing his receivers to run under it. That's the Caleb Williams that I saw in college and showed me the ability to make different kinds of throws. And you're starting to see that. And a big part of it, I think, is because he's more and more comfortable with what he's doing, where he's going, and the process is slowing down for him.
Kurt Warner talking with Spiegel and Holmes about the Bears and Caleb Williams. Kurt, you played on one of the most prolific offenses ever with a bunch of guys that wanted their touches. The Bears are clearly not there yet, but you can see the vision of what Ryan Poles is trying to put together, where you have DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and DeAndre Swift and Cole Kmet. You got a lot of guys that have to get fed. As a quarterback, what was your approach to making sure that everyone was happy?
My approach was to play the game in front of me and to teach the guys to understand what I was doing and for them to respect the way that I played the game. So, you know, it's very easy for guys to come back and say I was open, you know, throw it to me, get me the ball more, you know, get the ball into my hands. But when you can go on film, well, A, you know, it comes down to success, right? I mean, you know, guys can be much happier if they're not getting the ball, if the ball's going to the end zone, right? If you're making 12 play drives and you're finishing drives, that's the first thing that, you know, any good team player is going to be, yeah, I want the ball, but we're having success, so I can't argue as much. If you're not having success, then the superstars are like, give me the ball. Like, give it to me. Just throw it to me and I'll make a play. But it's constantly teaching guys why you're doing what you're doing. And so the consistency of doing that and the consistency of talking to guys and going, okay, I know you're open over here, but my read is off of this guy right there. And that guy told me to throw it, you know, backside to Torrey, not to you, Isaac, or to you, Isaac, and not to you, Torrey, and whatever that was. And when they start to understand that and see that you know what you're doing, they start to respect you as a player. Then it doesn't become as much about, especially from the quarterback standpoint, throw me the ball. Then it becomes more about the coordinator. Hey, okay, if you're designing plays and the plays are supposed to go to someone else, can you design some plays that are supposed, you know, that are going to go to me? And they start focusing on getting the right play calls so they get the football, not looking at the quarterback and going, why aren't you throwing it to me? So that became the process for me. It was just constantly teaching guys why. And then, you know, the fortunate part is having success. It was much easier to deal with those guys and the egos that all players have, dealing with those egos when you are able to go out and have success. And guys are going to get their touches. And 1 week, a guy might get 12 touches, and the next week they might get two. And it's really dictated by what the defense is doing, not by me choosing someone else. And then the other part of that. So, you know, been watching the Cowboys a lot the last couple of weeks. And a couple of weeks ago, they had a number of plays where they got one-on-one coverage on the outside. And so you have Brandon Cooks on one side, and then you have CeeDee Lamb on the other side. And there were a number of times in that game where in those one-on-one situations, Dak went to Brandon Cooks instead of CeeDee. Now, those are the ones that are a little bit harder. And those are the situations as a quarterback where if one of my guys wasn't getting a touch and I felt like everything was equal, that's when I would be a little more conscious of go, okay, Torrey hasn't got enough touches. One-on-one, same scenario. I like the matchup on both sides. Get the ball to Torrey or vice versa or to Fitz or to Anquan or whatever. And so those were the times I could be a little more judicious on making sure my guys, you know, that weren't touching the ball got the ball. Mm-hmm. But most times it was really dictated by the coverage.
Boy, that's great stuff and relatable for what we want the Bears offense to be. Two things on that. Hard to imagine, or I have to imagine it's difficult for a rookie to be the one teaching, you know, some of those veterans, at least in terms of what he sees. But the other thing, Lawrence, I would have been here a long time before I would have come up with the three wide receivers on the Arizona Cardinals in 2008 who got 1,000 yards. Larry Fitzgerald, yeah. Anquan Boldin, and Steve Breaston. As Kurt yep. Warner grew
wow.
3,500 yards, we would have been here a long time before Steve Breston's name came up. But, you know, Larry was all right when you fed Steve Breston, is what your point is.
Well, yeah, exactly. And we were happy because we were winning. And, you know, we went to a Super Bowl and we were winning, you know, division championships. And that's the stuff that ultimately, you know, can kind of quell some of that ego from those guys is realizing, you know, we're having success, but also the other guys are making plays. You know, if I was throwing it to Steve Breston 12 times a game and he was dropping six of them, I guarantee you Anquan and Larry would be in my ear going, what are you doing? Why are you throwing it to him? Find a way to throw it to us because he's not making plays. But when he's making plays, you know, now everybody gets a chance to eat and they know that if he's having success over there, it's going to lead to opportunities for them as well, because teams are going to have to start respecting what that guy can do. And, you know, it was an interesting point you said, you know, it's hard for a rookie to be able to lead and teach. Well, you know, I've always believed that, you know, as a leader, you have to earn the respect of your guys. And there's lots of different ways to earn respect. And one of the ways that I always tried to earn respect is I always wanted to be the smartest guy in the room. I always wanted to have the answers. I always wanted to be able to go to my receivers and be able to teach them and talk to them about why I needed them to do something, why I was doing what I was doing, to go into the offensive line room and know the protections better than they knew the protections. So I could talk to them about every scenario and say, this is what I need you to do. And this, I'll take care of this guy. I'm responsible for this guy. So it was one of the ways that, you know, as I got into the league, that I went into the, you know, those meetings and on the different teams I was on and said, this is how I'm going to earn respect. I'm going to study this stuff. I'm going to know this stuff. I'm going to know how it helps me and how it can make them better. And it was a way that I earned that respect, regardless of how long I had been with a team or how old I was at a particular time. It was something that I prided myself on. So we always have to look for ways to separate ourselves and to earn the respect of our guys. And that was one way that I chose to do it. And so I would study our protections heavily. So I didn't just, you know, leave it up to an offensive lineman. And then if I got caught in a tough situation, you know, point the finger at somebody else. I always wanted to know. I always wanted to be on top of it. I always wanted to have an answer, and I wanted to help those guys out because that was a way that helped me to earn respect in that room as well.
The Hall of Famer Kurt Warner with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score. So after the Bears win yesterday, Cole Kmet referenced Caleb Williams, quote, understanding fronts and getting us into better checks for our run game, unquote. And I was like, oh, that seems to be a level of quarterback influence that fans probably never think about, because I don't think about it that much. I mean, how does the quarterback get them into a better spot for the running game with checks?
Well, the biggest thing is, you know, and again, I don't know how the Bears do it, so I don't want to, you know, knock that comment at all. But all I would say is that, and again, you know, that's a part of it, and you have to see it. But, you know, for me, when I did it, you know, I wasn't like a genius on, you know, reading these fronts and going, oh, they're in this, so let me check to this play in our playbook. Most of the time, we just had run checks. So, you know, let's just say, for instance, we called a trap check. And so the trap was designed to go to the right, and I noticed that they were in, you know, an under front, and we wanted to go to the widest tackle. So I would just go opposite, you know, so, you know, or we would call two runs in the huddle, and they would give me the key. Hey, if they're in an over front, you know, alert it to this. And if they're not in an over front, then just leave it the way it is. And so,
wouldn't that be impressive for a rookie quarterback in his fifth start, even if he's just doing that?
No, that's what I expect him to do. So I expect him to be able to see the front and do what the coaches tell you to do. Now, if he's up there going, you know, one run play is called and he's taking some other play from the playbook and going, hey, I think this play's better, and check into that run, I would be overly impressed. But, you know, yeah, that's part of the job. And so, you know, maybe there's a lot of rookie quarterbacks that struggle with that and just kind of leave the run on, or even to the point where the coach says, we can't even give him an alert. You know, we can't give him a kill. We got to just run what we run because he's not able to recognize it. So I don't want to diminish it completely. I'm just saying that most of the time in the run game, even for a guy like me that had been in the, you know, the league for 12 years, I wasn't just, you know, using the whole menu of our run game and you know, checking to a bunch of different runs just because I thought they were going to be good. They simplified it for me, even where it's like, okay, look at this defensive tackle. He's in a three technique, run this. If he's in a one technique, run that. Don't screw it up, Kurt. Just look at that one guy and we'll simplify it for you. My job was more on the back end. But you know, again, anything that you take from a rookie that's doing those little things to help allow you to be more successful, you're going to take it after five games. And you know, it almost sounds like Cole is just saying, we're seeing progress in a lot of different areas. And even in the run game, even helping us to be more successful the last couple of weeks because he's better able to recognize what he sees up front.
Might be the legendary Chicago low bar for quarterbacking on display here, Lawrence.
And again, I don't want to low bar it because, you know, just a matter of, you know, I don't want to pretend like that's rocket science either in a lot of situations, but it's a good thing. It's a box to check that he's seeing things and he's making the right decision.
Kurt, I had the chance yesterday to do our pre and post game show with Patrick Manley and Olin Krutz. And I love talking with those guys about all sorts of things football related. But it was interesting. Like, Olin got really introspective about learning how to win. And some of the things that you were saying in the last answer kind of triggered that for me. So I wanted to know, what were the things that you felt like you had picked up along the way that were indicators of you learning how to win?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing on the teams that I was on and the idea of learning how to win was not panicking when things went against us. You know, because so often when you're in an organization that has never won, and that's ironic, I was talking to Aaron Rodgers this week before the game, and it was one of the things that he mentioned, the idea of building a culture. And the Jets, you know, have not won a lot in recent years. And so it's so easy for people when things don't go well to start pointing fingers. And it's so easy to go, oh, here we go again, right? I mean, this is what happens, you know. Somebody's going to screw it up and, you know, we're going to fall behind and we're never going to be able to get back into it. So one of the biggest things for me is just the ability to start to believe and to have hope, regardless of what goes on, that you're in a place where you can win football games. And so that to me is probably the biggest thing when it comes to you building that kind of winning culture and learning how to win. It's making the plays in the moment. It's not panicking when you make a mistake. It's not, you know, looking around or getting tight when, you know, you had a lead and all of a sudden it's tied and the other team tied it up and you're not panicking like, oh my gosh, you know, what are we going to do now? It's believing that you're going to make the next play and you're going to do what needs to be done to, you know, to be in a football game. And so, you know, Aaron talked to us about that. They fall down 17-0 against Minnesota yesterday. And, you know, it wasn't a great game and their offense didn't look prolific by any means, but they fought their way back into it and they made some plays and their defense stepped up and their offense made a few plays along the way and they got themselves back into a football game. And that's part of that process is being able to do that. Another part of the process is beating the teams you're supposed to beat. So playing against Carolina yesterday, they were favorites. They were supposed to win and they went out and dominated that football game and won. So that's another part of it is that, you know, you go into games against teams you're supposed to beat and, you know, you don't, you know, chalk it up that we're going to win. You don't think, you know, you're good enough that you can just step on the field. You go out and play the game and you dominate teams that you're supposed to dominate. And so those are the, you know, the things that you see in the boxes that you like to check as you're building that culture and starting to believe that you can win.
The Bears are getting ready. They're leaving today for London. What advice do you have for them?
Man, I don't even know. You know, there's so many teams that do it so many different ways coming over here, and I don't really know the best way to do it. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to try to find your groove as fast as you can. And, you know, having been over here just calling games for a number of years, you never really know when it's going to hit you. Is that you get over here and you think, oh, I'm good. I slept on the plane. Everything's good. And then, you know, 7 o'clock the next day, you know, you just hit this wall and you can't, you know, can't get away from it. And so it's trying to get here early enough, trying to figure out your schedule, sleeping when you need to, so you feel like you're rested and can put your best foot forward. And so it's really hard to know, you know, what that routine should be. And it's why there's so many different teams and coaches that do it so many different ways, because nobody really has a blueprint on the best way to do it. And so to me, it was always about sleep when you had the opportunity to sleep, try to get your rest and get rested up and get on the schedule as soon as you possibly could.
Anything funky for the team in terms of the in-game experience or in-stadium experience itself?
You know, I think the, you know, the atmosphere is great. You know, the fans are awesome. So that part's going to be fun. You always have to prepare for probably a little bit of condensation at some point. There's always going to be a little bit of rain. The turf has never been the best over here, although they're doing a better job in Tottenham. You know, they've created kind of their own turf and bought their own turf for the NFL game. So you hope that wasn't the case. But you saw in the Jets game, this past weekend, you know, some guys were slipping. And, you know, so learning the footing, being comfortable with the footing, make sure you bring different cleats and get ready for that. But outside of that, it's a great environment. It's a fun environment to play in. And I don't think it's going to be anything crazy like pregame or beforehand on what these guys have to do. It's more just being able to manage a little bit of the different climate here and the environment from that standpoint.
Kurt, thanks so much, man. You're the best, especially because you see the Caleb progress this week.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
See you, man. Kurt Warner, the Hall of Famer, the Super Bowl MVP, joining us on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. He had his say. We've had our say. Now we want to hear what you think. 312-644-6767. Your phone calls on a Bears Monday here next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
No, we've been taking steps every week, and I think the defense continued to play really well. Obviously, our team units continue to play well, and then offensively, we've just been growing, and I thought that was the one of the better games I've been a part of since being here, honestly. Ran the ball when we needed to really well. You know, Caleb was really effective in the pass game with the wind, and I don't think that should be looked over. It was a really tough day in the wind, and he was able to, you know, really get the ball through the air effectively doing that stuff, and know, that's not an easy task, especially here. So I thought that was really good, and just overall a really good football game for us.
It feel was like, a good day.
Feel like that's the context. Hell yes, it was, Lawrence. Isley Brothers.
It's a good day with Cole Kmet, Bears offense, and you're right. It's Isley Brothers sample. Can't go wrong with that.
You felt it when Cole said it. It's like, wait, one of the best games I've been around for? Cole's been around a while. We've now reached the point where, like, this is the fifth year for Cole Kmet. And, like, even when we're talking to Kurt Warner and we're like, Kurt, he's making checks on the run game. He's like, well, that's basic stuff. And I'm thinking, well, Kurt, have you seen what we've been doing? Like, did Mitch Trubisky ever make checks on the run game?
Not five games in.
Damn straight. And Justin, if he's making checks on the run game?
Not five games in.
Hell no, not five games
in. And usually those checks are like, I'm going to just do it.
Yes.
I'll just do it.
I'm going to check to myself.
I'll just do it.
With good reason. But that's the thing. We live and exist in a freaking quarterback wasteland. And we got a guy five games in who's making checks in the run game and everything else. Controlling the game at the line of scrimmage,
you
man.
You know you're just feeding red meat to people who already are predisposed to not liking Kurt Warner's expert analysis of the Bears.
Caleb Hader. He's not. He's just, I think Kurt just thinks it's very hard.
He's not easily impressed.
He's not easily impressed. He doesn't like anointing rookies.
Nor should he be.
He's got a higher standard for this stuff than what we have.
No doubt.
And I appreciate that high standard.
Let's talk with you. 312-644-6767 is the number. Hey, Jimmy, you're on Spiegel and Holmes.
Thanks so much for taking my call. I love the show. I love having Kurt Warner on. And, you know, you're right. Kurt, probably hard to impress, but, you know, I think he is somewhat impressed with Caleb. And I just want to make one point. Watching Caleb yesterday and then watching Justin Fields against the Cowboys, they're still running quarterback sweeps with the Steelers. They're getting 5 yards, playing good defense, but he's not processing. He's not throwing the touch pass. Even Chris Collinsworth said the same thing. He had a one-on-one with a 6'7" tight end that he couldn't loft the pass over, and the progressions aren't there. I just love that Caleb keeps building and building, and you're not even scratching the surface yet. So it's a bright future for us. I'm excited, and I'll listen to your comments. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jimmy.
This is what I want to get into later, because you know if you watch the tape of Justin last week, those things that you wanted him to do, he did. It's such a weird place that instead of Jimmy taking his time with us to talk about how great Caleb was, it always has to start with, well, I was watching Justin. Psh, this Caleb guy's way better than him. Instead of, like, there's so much about that mentality overall that we need to really dig into.
See, but like so much time was spent by us and others about Caleb versus Justin. Hell, Lawrence, there was a town hall. We did a town hall about it. But I mean, like, there was so much about that. It's still early enough in the process that I got no problem with a guy like Jimmy saying, you know, I watched and now I see the difference, because there's an educational component as well. I think we are trying to educate people into what Caleb is doing, which is unique, and we just referenced that Justin was not doing it.
But the problem is that for some reason, my guy Herb Lawrence says this all the time, you don't have to blow out someone else's candle to make yours shine brighter. And there's no better example of a Bears quarterback killing than what Caleb Williams did yesterday. But even with that, it's still like, well, We've got to step on the last guy, even though the new guy crushed that bleep yesterday.
Let me ask you a question. Is there a difference if Jimmy is a guy who was always in the Caleb camp and now wants to step on Justin just a little more and dunk on him one last time? or if Jimmy is a guy who thought Justin was the right thing and has now seen it and needs to say, you know what? I'm glad you guys actually educated me and now I get it. Is there a difference there? Because there sure is to me.
Sure, but I would also say that there were some really great moments for Justin last night that if you were actually watching the game, including him with a fourth quarter go-ahead touchdown on a shovel pass, that was executed brilliantly by him.
Absolutely. And it was using the threat of what he can do. Absolutely. But it was not looking across the field and going to 3, 4, 5 reads. It was not that stuff. And I think to win a title, you need the stuff that Caleb is already showing.
I agree, but it's just weird that it's, you know, the guy that you want did the dude stuff yesterday.
Human nature, baby.
We can talk about him doing the dude stuff yesterday.
It's human nature.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Oh, you're on the score.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, we can.
Oh, very good. You know, so I think the biggest thing that I've seen in these first 5 games is the first 3, he really sat in the pocket a long time. Didn't really move from the pocket. And these last 2 games where his passer rating was over 100, he's been rolling out tremendously more and not sitting in the pocket getting sacked. I think that's a big difference and a nice learning experience for him.
He's been rolling out. We've now learned, you know, when they do the outside zone runs, that pairs with the bootlegs and the quarterback moving. So he's been doing some of that. He also yesterday showed you a ton of beautiful scrambles. Just exquisite. And we're going to get to some of that more actually tomorrow.
Matched with the, let me show you this cannon that I have.
Oh, absolutely. But like the gorgeous scrambles to buy time, and the eyes are always downfield. But when he does scramble, he doesn't get hurt. I mean, you saw some pocket extension yesterday at an extremely high level. Some of which resulted in throws, some of which resulted in little scrambles for 4 or 5 yards and getting out of bounds and not taking a hit. Let's go! Saw a lot of good stuff from Caleb.
See?
Almost did
See?
It. Yeah, it's your fault.
It's totally my fault. Uh-huh. Were you about to say Jaden Daniels? Because that would have been that would really been.
That's the next one.
Uh-huh.
I was told by the Bible not to covet my neighbor's quarterback.
But
I think
a lot of people are.
I know. That's how it works.
They're doing that. We're going to keep taking phone calls, though. 312-644-6767 is the number. That's Matt Fishman. And I'm Jonathan Hood. Back after this on the score.
You're listening to
Panthers must cross midfield, get to the Bears 49 for a first down. Dalton wrapped up. Down he goes. Back at the 34, Dexter and Walker take down Dalton, and the Panthers will punt it away.
Hey, Dino Dex, let's go, man.
Dino Dex. Javon Dexter is having himself a year. Saw this coming, didn't we, Lawrence? I mean, that guy worked hard to change his body. He cut out the honey buns, Emma, pretty famously. And Javon Dexter has 4 sacks. He is second among all defensive tackles in the NFL. Dexter Lawrence, the absolute beast of the Giants, is first with 6. And then it's Javon Dexter. He's tied for 10th in terms of sacks in the NFL. He has 14 pressures. That is the most on the Chicago Bears. Tied for 6th most among all defensive tackles in the NFL. And oh, by the way, Jalen Carter has 0 sacks this year. Jalen Carter has 0 sacks. He has 8 tackles on the year. Javon Dexter has 13. And yes, I am comparing them, and I will continue to think of them in a pair, not directly picked behind each other, but I think Ryan Poles made a good choice in not necessarily investing in Jalen Carter. Jalen Carter also, by the way, started a beef with Saints fans 2 weeks ago and needed to be restrained by Nick Sirianni and Big Dom on the sidelines. But hey, who am I to compare someone else's failings to our own guy's success, Lawrence Holmes? I'm a human. That's who I am. And I see Javon Dexter killing it. Give the man some love.
He's been really good.
Yeah.
And way better than I was expecting early on. And like you said, he's put in the work to change his body as much as he can. Remember, he's a lot taller than most of the people that play that position. But
I've been impressed with what I've seen. Olin made me look at something very differently yesterday, though. He said, and I can pass this along to you, watch the run game of the opponent when they shift out the defensive line. So when they go from the starters to the rotation.
So they leave Big Bill, you mean?
Well, that's what we were talking about, that Billings needs to be out there as much as possible because he's so good.
He's also so damn enjoyable.
He's super enjoyable. He's like my favorite player on this team. Tell Jalen.
It's a good choice.
But it's something to watch for going forward on when they rotate Montez out and Jervon out. How do they get attacked after that? Just pay attention to it going forward. Put that on the list of things for you to watch while you're watching Bears games. Plainfield and Ray. Hey, Ray, you're on the score.
Hey, just wanted to say I like a lot of what Kurt Warner had to say, but for him to say that five games into Caleb's career, that's standard stuff for what he should be checking down to. Didn't he say he was 12 years into his career and they were only giving him two options? Like, that doesn't really line up.
That is an excellent catch in terms of the logic. He said, yeah, it was not like I was a genius at it. They just gave me two. That's what I was doing. So, yeah, you know, he's not a hater. He's just got a high standard.
High standard.
And we're learning a ton with his input. And he's good-natured about it when I go back at him a little bit. So everybody's playing the role very perfectly here.
I like that he's okay with the pushback,
absolutely,
too. And comes with his own stuff to kind of back up his point of view, which yes. I think is good. That's the whole point of having him on. Not everyone is supposed to be a cheerleader. Keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jerry, you're on the score.
Yeah. This is all big hype after one big victory over the JV team. I mean, I want to see what happens when they play the Vikings or the Lions within our division.
I think that is a very fair opinion, Jerry. I think that that's something that we've been trying to do today is make sure that you – and I was texting back with someone on the text line. I'm like, yeah, these steps forward are really important, and I don't think that they should be overshadowed. But you had a team that was more hurt than bad a week ago that you beat. And what did you say when I said, well, what if the Rams would have had Puka Nacua or Cooper Kupp?
I think they could have completed some of their red zone situations that they struggled in. I think the Bears might have lost that game last week.
Yesterday, the Bears beat a team that's more bad than hurt. And then that team got even more hurt.
For sure.
They're not good at football at all.
The Panthers.
But I still think that you can look at some of the stuff that happened inside that game and be excited about the growth of the quarterback. And now we'll see.
And this
week is a test.
For sure. And the whole team. I mean, the effort all across the board, all the different kinds of turnovers they got. Listen to the old salt Kevin Byard, who had himself an interception yesterday, was in on a big tackle. He and Jalen Johnson had a good tackle together. We'll ask Jalen about it at 4. Jalen was very physical on that play, among others. But listen to Kevin Byard talk about what yesterday was. Was yesterday the ceiling? No.
I've been talking about just playing complimentary as a team, and I think we did that a lot today. Had 3 turnovers, should have 4. JL, you know, we definitely had a discussion about that on the sideline. But, yeah, like you said, man, just a great team effort. Guys got sacks, turnovers, I mean, in all different varieties. The only one we was missing was a sack fumble. So, like I said, just exciting day. That's what it's supposed to look like, though. I mean, that's the standard that we play with, and that's how we want to play every single game.
That is the standard. This is the floor for what they want to accomplish as a team. They know it. They know they're playing a Panthers team. Yeah, the Panthers offense has been good the last 2 weeks under Andy Dalton, and they can run the ball, and Eric Washington got them in the right mindset. But they know that's just who's on the schedule, man. That's how these guys function, and they're going to learn from it and build confidence from it and go from there.
I like that. I'd rather them win those games, whether it's against a hurt Rams team or a bad and hurt Panthers team. And as we get, maybe the hope is that once you get to the tougher teams on your schedule, that you're able to handle some of the crises that pop up. I really love, and you know, like when I was watching the film after week 2, I think there's a lot there. And it's just a matter of making sure you get
can take care of it. But you have to pay attention to some of the other things that happen earlier in the season. Like, what happens when the Bears go up against a strong defensive tackle again? What happens? Because we saw the pockets collapse in games where they did. Yes. And even in one game where they didn't, where the Colts were out there without DeForest Buckner, and they were able to get pressure. Keep it all, try to keep it all in perspective while having fun watching it.
I think that's totally fair. Let's give a little love to Coleman Shelton.
Hell yeah.
Who's had a bad year at
bleeping
times.
Bleeping fire.
That's what he said as he's identifying blitzers. And also, did you see him running all the way downfield in front of DeAndre Swift on the screen pass that Swift took all the way down to the 1 yard line? Swift doing a beautiful job of staying behind his blockers and behind Shelton, just kind of going back and forth, left and right, looking like a surfer riding a wave for a second. And Shelton going all the way down the field. That was impressive. Showed good speed doing that.
I agree. Jalen Johnson is going to join us. Let's ask him who he was looking to fight yesterday if it would have come down to that. We'll do that next here on The Score.